and welcome to another special episode of Zapped to the Past. Last week, well, we finished off January 1990 with all kinds of shenanigans, Great Gaming Retrograde, and shenanigans with Operation Thunderbolt. And we discussed all that, but life sometimes finds a way to get in the way, and that's what's happened here. We're away on work business, which is preventing us from recording our normal episodes, but we don't want to leave you with nothing to listen to, so we've been going back to the ones we missed, those games that we missed back in the days of the previous decade, those early games from 1985, the first few issues. We've been sort of covering them on and off, and now we've got another one of those episodes here. So we've got six games that we are going to look at that came from issues, I think, 2, 3, and possibly 4.
Yeah, that's right.
So there's sort of covering those and just picking off some of those games that we never covered back then. I'm joined as ever by Mr. Graham Raddings. You up, Graham? You okay?
I'm very well, thank you. Yes, it's been nice to explore some of these, the games we missed, or really these are the, because we didn't do the episodes the same, did we, back then? We picked the games out of the issue, but now we're just going back and doing them now.
Yeah, we've got six titles for this special, and let's not waste any time. With no cover to sort of speak of, we're just going to get into it. So let's get into that very first one. Well, our first game that we never looked at back then, but we're picking up again now in this special Zapped to the Past, Back to the Past, whatever it's called, episode, is Spelunker. Spelunker, Graham, over to you. Tell us all about Spelunker.
Yes, so Spelunker. Now, let me tell you this, right? Caving, as it's known in the UK, but spelunking, as it's probably known everywhere else in the world, so going into deep, dark caves for fun, is my idea of a nightmare. I actually I'm not just claustrophobic. I hate damp, dark caves. So it's not a good thing for me to be doing that. So this is a game from issue 2 of Zap. It scored 79% back in the old Zapparoo days. This is from Areola Soft, you know, Nipple Soft, as we like to call them. It was copyright Broderbund Software. Creator was Tim Martin and Micrographics. The producer is Micrographics. I'm not sure what that means, but they pop up as a little band of people on the opening sequence. And the musician is also Tim Martin. Back in the days when one or two people made games like that, as it is. Mm. So there's quite a lot of, interestingly, but I'm not going to go through it all, there's loads and loads of scenario for this. Loads.
Yeah, there is.
Loads. And I'm not going to go through all of that. I'm just going to give you the notion of the sort of first couple of paragraphs to give you the sort of flavor of it, because there's so much to go through. Just go and read it. It's on Lemon. You can go and read it if you want. It's Documents to Spelunker. Cave scavenging has been in my blood ever since I can remember. Not in mine, it hasn't. That's what spelunkers do, you know. A cave's lure can be strong, especially when it's loaded with treasure like this one. But be warned, this one is different. It has a reputation for swallowing people up. That's the reason I don't do it, that.
Yeah.
First of all, it was as black as the Ace of Spades down there, everywhere, and sticky hot, with fire pits and steam shooting up out of volcanic vents. That steam can cook you like a lobster in less than 10 seconds. I steered clear of it. And it goes on basically explaining how this person's going through some caves and everything else, and then it gives you the instructions of getting started. So it says, after loading, a title page sequence will appear on your screen. Remember, these instructions were written back in the days when they needed to be very instructive.
They did, 1984.
And you will hear the game's theme song. So it tells you what you will see in here. This will be followed by a screen showing the top 4 scores. No scores will appear first time that you boot the disc. Immediately thereafter, a demo mode will begin. Press the joystick button to begin the game. You can skip the demo and high score screen by pressing the joystick button as the title screen comes on and the music begins. Very descriptive. Roy Walker, isn't it?
Do what you see. Say what you see. Do what we tell you.
So this is, it's nice. It's a bit of an odd thing, this game. It's nice, but oddly melancholy, the music, when it first starts. It's got like a little title sequence. Broderbund games often did, didn't they? It had a little sort of bit of a filming title opening, and this one's no exception. And you get the kind of a sort of sad music. It's not bad. It's just a bit, it's of its time, but kind of melancholy. Mm-hmm. And then you'll start the game and you begin via the elevator. So, you know, all things start with the elevator in this. The game sees you controlling a little explorer through a series of interconnected caves. The game takes up the top 3/4 of the screen with your score and lives at the bottom. The graphics are a simple affair. Browns for cave surfaces and collectibles in all the different colours as indicated. There are some blobs that you need to jump over, otherwise they will kill you. And some spooky ghosts and bats along the way as well, which cause trouble. The idea of the game is to explore, run, jump, find and otherwise collect objects that are inside of the caves by spelunking them. Mm-hmm. And then sort of navigating your way around into the various different nuances of the caves and things like that to make your way through the cave. Touch the wrong thing or get touched by the wrong thing and you will lose a life, lose all of your lives, and it's game over. Okay, fairly straightforward logic. Old-fashioned game logic.
Yeah.
It harks back to a simpler notion of arcade adventure type games. It's like the granddad of something like Rick Dangerous, this. The graphics are basic, but they work perfectly well for what they are. The design of the caves is actually quite fiendish when you get down to it. Each of the layers, as you scroll down in the elevator, the layers of the cave kind of reveal themselves, and you can sort of jump into the cave, run across a little bit, and then you'll maybe jump over gaps and things like that. Then you might find a ladder and that take you up. And then the next screen, if you go to the next screen, it kind of slides across into the next view. Mm. And you can explore more and get further into the caves and get more of the treasure. Obviously, the further in you go, the more you'll run out of a couple of resources. I think you've got batteries that you have to collect that recharge your kind of, I guess, your torch, really, but ultimately. And there's also dynamite that you can pick up so you can block, you know, blow out blockages from certain areas of the cave and things like that. It's that kind of game, you know. It's a bit like a cave-based Pitfall with a bit more sort of animation to it. It's a bit more like that. Very Rick Dangerous-y, but very early on. And like I said, the graphics are basic, but they work well. And the caves are quite well designed in the sense that as you get further in, they get more complicated. There's weird little lifts that you can go in, as well as the ladders. Some of the objects are in quite hard to reach places, and you've got to sort of think about how you're going to get there. And if you die at any of those points, it will often take you back to kind of a previous point. Now, that can be a good thing or a bad thing, because when it does take you back to those previous points, it also resets anything that you might have otherwise resolved or fixed. So any cave blockages that were previously blown up by a dynamite will be back again, and you'll need to go and get the dynamite again. That is a bit of a pain. It's quite punishing to do that, to reset things. But early games, don't they all have that kind of, you know, that kind of punishing kind of logic a little bit? So fiendish caves, like I said, there's quite a lot to explore because, you know, the caves do run pretty deep here. Death is never that far away in this game, and it is very challenging. So, you know, touch this, you die, drop too far, you die. That kind of logic.
It is, yeah.
But you can always make your way back to the lift and sort of try and navigate your way up and down and take on the different routes through to the different caves and areas. And you've got to try and do that. But like I said, it's just when you get taken back to, and it's reminded me of I think it might have even been Pitfall, where it sort of scrolled you back. If you didn't collect enough life, it scrolled you back to a pretty, and it's a little bit like that. So it has that kind of punishing. It feels, it's why I'm calling the unfairness quotient that you get in these games. These early games always had this unfairness quotient. It's how much unfairness that they put in. And it's probably because they're just a little bit naive about designing games in a sort of a greater expanse. This is a arcade kind of mentality. There's still very much the arcade's mindset about how they were designing games in this. So games are punishing. They are difficult. They are challenging. It's not unexpected for you to just keep repeating the same thing over and over again. That's an arcade logic. Nowadays, some games make a big deal out of that. So it does have that. And it has that unfairness quotient. Those early games do. The sounds in it are more or less straight out of the Atari soundbook. I mean, this couldn't sound more like an Atari game. Maybe it was an Atari game at some stage.
It was first designed on the Atari,
And you can tell because it's got Atari sounds. I mean, it almost sounds like a 2600, you know, same sort of sounds. So it's very pokey sounding. Mm. But they are what they are. It works for the context of the game. The game has a weird gloominess about it, though. I guess it's because it's caving and it's kind of dank and muddy brown and stuff like that. But it's offset with the purple colours and that. But that music at the start does kind of set the tone for the game. It's just kind of a bit maudlin. The cover of the box is kind of this, you know, fairly aggressive image, isn't it, of that kind of sweaty man, sort of, you know, looking intense and looking quite scary. You know, it looks like a miner than a caver.
It's very close up, isn't it? It's very, it's just his face.
Exactly. So, you know, it's caving in of itself is that kind of, it's very claustrophobic, very close up, very enclosed. I get it. I get what they went for, and it kind of works. I don't think spelunking was well known as a term in the UK. I don't know that for sure, but I have a feeling it probably was not necessarily going to, people aren't going to look at that in the 80s and go, well, I've always wanted a spelunking game. Maybe they did. I don't know, but
maybe.
I suspect it probably didn't sell itself in that respect, in certainly in Britain. But it's competent enough, this game. It's very challenging, very difficult, but I think it would have been quite a nice thing to have and play back in 1984 and 85 when it came out. So it's quite pricey for a game of that time at £10, but there is a lot to go at. I think there's 5 or 6 full levels of this. And when I say levels, it's not just one screen. These screens are pretty big. Mm. So, you know, you're scrolling through a lot of screens on all the different levels. There's a lot to go at. You could be playing this for quite some time. It is a bit samey though over time. So again, a curse of the early 80s games. I didn't think it was that bad. It got 79%. Yeah, I don't know how you score these kind of things at this point. It's 80%, 70%, 80%. Yeah, it's all right. It's about right for this. It's okay, but I think over time, you might get a bit bored of it, I think, after sort of you've gone down the 17th brown cave. You might get a bit bored of that. But I thought it was all right for 1984. It certainly gives some of these modern games. There's more to do in this in a 1984 game than there was in Strider. And that featured just as much brown. So take note. Spelunk, don't stride, I would say. But what about you?
Yeah, I'm pretty much exactly the same. Nice opening music and title screen to this. Moody and simple. Yeah. But yeah, for the time, I liked it. I liked that tune. It was nice. And the game was similar. It may look a little ropey on the eyes. I think the main character reminded me of Bounty Bob Strikes
Back.
Yeah,
that sort of style, isn't it?
It's that kind of sprite. Sort of, yeah, little sprites. Game from 1984. I think this had a lot going for it. I mean, it's 1983 originally on the Atari 8-bit. It also was released in the arcade. It's got loads of releases, this, weirdly. I was looking through them. Yeah. It came out for the Atari. It got an arcade conversion in 85. Wow. But it also, later, came out on the 3DS. And then on the Wii and the Wii U, it got released on those.
Bizarre.
Wow. Obviously in their virtual arcade sort of thing. So quite interesting. So it's got a really, I mean, for 1984, it's got a lot going for it. Some really intricately designed levels that at first seem quite obvious, but you're like, how the hell am I going to get there? Because you've got different entrances for your elevator, haven't you? Your lift as to where to go in. So you're thinking, right, this way I've gone doesn't loop into this, so I've got to take one of the other entrances to go back to my lift, go down another one, try and get into there and get back. So it's quite intricate, like the way that these levels are sort of designed out, because you can't see, it doesn't scroll and you can't see all the entrances and exits. So I think it's quite low, which seemed quite rare for a time. In a lot of, and I got the games you were sort of saying about, it also reminded me of Hero.
Yeah, it had that vibe, didn't it? That kind of look.
Well, because Hero's going down into caves, blowing up stuff with dynamite and finding stuff. So it's similar, and you know, sort of they get bigger and bigger as they go on, just a little more grounded, obviously. And this year, walking in Hero, you had the sort of jetpack, didn't you?
Yeah,
or the helipactor. It's got its annoyances. I found it was too easy to overjump on ropes and ladders. I would just come out the other side and fall. And because you can only fall like about 3 feet before you die,
yeah,
I lost a lot of lives because he just wouldn't grab the rope properly. Yeah. I was like, oh, for God's sake. So those
Bounty
kind of
Bob
things
had
are annoying.
That problem.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. So these old games, they have that sort of twitchy problem. They're not quite tuned properly, but you know, and falling less than three, you know, falling 3 feet. We've seen that in loads of games. What was that other one? There was a castle, not like castles, not to create the one where you're going. Well, there was Batman, yeah, but there was another one where you're going down in sort of caves and stuff as well, which you looked at ages ago. Similar sort of thing.
Yeah, there was a balloon, wasn't you, floating about the caves? And there's a C16 like game where we played that.
Maybe, yeah. There's loads of them, but you can't fall very far. There was that bloody drink fruit for gravy juice or whatever it was as well.
Yeah, the one with the kangaroo in it.
Yeah, so those kind of games. It was kind of the rigor for a while. But once I got into this, started collecting dynamite and treasures, avoiding the ghosts, using my space beam, what it was that come after me. I found this really enjoyable. Comes with a rolling demo and a high score. Really nice upfront presentation. You watch that rolling demo, it goes on for ages and does loads of stuff. You can get a really good sense of the game for it. And exactly what you said, I wrote the same thing. Another example, 1983 for design, showing the games we're looking at now a thing or two. You know, these are games that were made 5-6 years prior that were doing all these things that games now are just like, oh, what are we doing? The games back then were doing it. They had all these things. The punitive measures that you say, it's still checkpoints. At least you had checkpoints. So you went back. And so there was that. You didn't just go back to the beginning sort of thing like you do in so many games. Like in Moonwalker, when you got caught in the maze, you were back in that top left. Bloody annoying. I think, 79%. I think they didn't like it because it looked like, I think they were like, oh, it looks rubbish. And it sort of read the review. Julian Rignall was moaning because the guy you were playing was fat. So that's why he didn't like it. I'm thinking, okay, fair enough, but that's not really the point, is it? I get it at the time. You may have thought, but the actual game design behind this sort of thing is a lot better. I think would have been 80s for me, but I think it's quite good. But I can see what you're saying. There's a lot of brown caves to go out, but that's spelunking, isn't it, I guess?
No, I have to say, it's just, you know, at the time, I think you'd have found this a great game. 80 for the one, a great pickings, and it's a game with lots of exploring to do, with lots of things to explore. A lot of these, explore the thing games were quite popular back then, and this is a good one.
Yeah, it is. I thought this was pretty decent. Yeah, good one. Good one to end our look at issue 2, because that's our last one from issue 2. Issue 2 is all now done. Yay. We've looked at all the games from issue 2. Let's move on to our next one. We start looking at games from issue 3. Oh, God, I wish we didn't. This is High Bouncer. So it's not saying hello to the dog from Neighbours. This is High Bouncer. This was £6.95. So it's got 64%. And now I'm sure we've spoken about the Mr. Men before, haven't we? We've spoken about the Mr. Men somewhere at some point in time on some episode.
I think maybe.
We mentioned the Mr. Men. The books and the cartoons made famous by, you know, written and created by Roger Hargreaves. So I'm sure about that. So I'm not going to go into the details. Suffice to say, the Mr. Men, there were a series of children's books based around characters like Mr. Tickle, Mr. Bump, Mr. Greedy, and in the case here, Mr. Bounce. So Mr. Bounce is a round yellow ball of a fellow, and he's trying to help out his fellow Mr. Men in the town where they live by completing various tasks that they're either too lazy or too useless to do themselves. I'm pretty down on the Mr. Men for this one. This
Mr. Published- Lazy and Mr. Useless, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. This was published by Mirrorsoft and made by H&H Software. Only game they did that I could find. And all I can say is thank God for that. This was also released on the BBC Micro. Maybe they made other games on the BBC Micro. I didn't look. I pity them as much as I do us. There's no story here that I can notice. That basically, some stuff's gone on around Mr. Town. What's it called? Wherever they live, Mr. Man Town. And you as Mr. Bounce must sort it out. See it, really. The game is made up of four screens. There's just four screens. Yep. In each one, Mr. Bounce must help out the useless Mr. Man on the screen who's got into some kind of rubbish trouble. Okay, so in the first screen, you must retrieve Mr. Tall's scarf, which is moving along the floor like some kind of wiggly snake. In the second, you must fling a brick from a seesaw into Mr. Lazy's dilapidated hovel because it's falling to bits and you've got to put some bricks into it. In the third, you need to collect apples for the annoying Mr. Bump. And in the fourth, you must cover the sun with clouds to stop Mr. Freeze from melting.
Sounds very dramatic.
That's it. Each level is a single screen, as I said. Moving from the side of the screen brings you back on the other side, so it's a wraparound. Your character just wraps around from one side to the other. Controls are simple enough. They really are. Left and right to roll Mr. Bounce. You don't walk, you roll. And fire makes you jump. The longer you press fire, the higher you go. We don't see that very often, but okay. Not that it does you any good here. On the various screens, other Mr. Men will wander about. Collision with anything, and I mean anything, other than what you must collect sends Mr. Bounce careering around the screen in the grip of a violent death.
Definitely does that.
He's like, boo, sound goes, boo. It's like, oh, it just bounces around. It goes on for ages. Do this four times because it's the number of lives you got and it is game over, for which you will be thankful. So when the game starts as well, you can pick an arcade mode or practice mode, which I didn't quite understand. If you go into practice mode, you can set up some which screen you want to practice and which variables. So I think there's different things. There's like three variants of each screen. So there's 12 variants to do. I think like on the second Mr. Tall one, you've got to find his gloves and stuff like that. So if you pick the scarf up on the first screen, picking the scarf up, on the first screen is where you'll first experience the pain of this game. For it's moving, and there's no real obvious place to pick it up. Neither is there an obvious control. I was jabbing at the fire button, pulling down, pressing up, trying to do anything to pick it up. Eventually, at some point, I must have done the right thing when it's at the right place because I miraculously picked it up, and he basically floated over to Mr. Tall and put it on him, and everything went happy, and he bounced around, and everything stops, and suddenly you're on the next screen. The Mr. Men just walk along predetermined paths. The other ones, so they move at different speeds. In the first screen, there's one coming from the sort of depth. There's no depth, though. He's coming from in the depth of the screen. They've kind of given it this 3D look. Or hitting anything. There's a bird that flies across. There's an apple that falls from a tree. Hitting anything kills you. But you've got little space to move. And you get that great in death sequence. It's all over. It's just down the tweet noises. Jumping over anything because of the space you have and because of the size you are is a pain in the ass. You'll quickly die. The great destiny is that it's just shit. This game is just god-awful. The shitness of this experience have you reaching for the off switch. The visuals are poor, even by the standards of back then. They're really crappily drawn. The perspective's all off. The sprites just wobble about like crapness. The music is eye-twitch-inducing. And the controls and general design of the game is bloody awful. This was utter crap. It got 64%. I have no idea. Their review of it was like, we quite liked it. I'm like, you're idiots. Because this is one of the worst things I've had to play. Because it's not. It's not any. They were like, oh, it's just for kids. We're like, this would drive kids nuts. The controls are so crap. I hated this. High bouncer, low trouncer. Crap. Awful. Get off. I hated it. What did you think?
what's to say about it? Classic annoying music of the time. The game, I mean, what the hell? You know, it's a Mr. Men tie-in, so the characters kind of look like you'd expect them to look, I guess. And for the three-year-olds that were probably going to play this, who don't really ever play the game for any other reason, they just want to see characters bounce around the screen, they'd probably stick this on and they'd be laughing. You know, you'd probably have a three or four or five-year-old laughing at the bouncing around. They're not going to want to do the game. This is an attempt just to... It's the earliest version of an iPad game for kids I've ever seen, you know, where they just literally just throw stuff on the screen and go, ah, silly stuff's happening. Look at the silly stuff. It's just that. There's no game here. isn't there? There's no attempt to there's no attempt to make one. No, you roll around jumping about. You know, as long as you can do that, kids are going to go, look, I can make Mr. Bouncy go. Yeah, you're great. You're great. Look, you know, well done. It was worth spending 300 quid on this computer for that. So, you know what? You know, maybe this was the game that you got to justify the purchase of a Commodore 64 to your wife, who, you know, who's got, when you've got a 5-year old, what, he's not really into computers. Well, look at this marvelous Mr. Men game. You like the Mr. Men, don't you, Timmy? Eh, see? See, it's worth spending 300 quid. No, what's this other game you've got? This Spelunker, that's for, that's not for Timmy, that one. So, I don't know. I don't think this was ever meant to be a game that was anyone was meant to take any kind of seriously at all. It is just a version, and a moving version of the books with no more thought to it than that. And with the basic story that you can semi be involved in that respect, it doesn't deserve 64%. It shouldn't really be given a percent. This is the equivalent of getting fuzzy felt and throwing it in the air.
I've looked at it as a game, and if you have to look at it as a game, then it is utter crap.
Yeah. If this is a game being released as a game and a gaming magazine reviewed, it is awful. This is not a game. This is just it's just an animated series of interludes. There's nothing about it that's gamey in that respect. Yeah, maybe it's not even a particularly good one of them. But it would keep a 3-year-old occupied for half an hour while you ate while you drank your beer if you was in the '80s, wouldn't it? Or you was, doing
hawk.
Something nefarious.
Yeah, you're kind of hawk.
Yeah, you're doing some nefarious deed while you're keeping Timmy occupied. But other than that, I don't know. There's nothing to it. I didn't see a game in it. Therefore, it's not a very good game because there's no game to play. It was just, I spent some time moving a Mr. Man around. That's as much as you can say that I could do, because that's all it could do. If you're going to review these things, then this is a classic famous early Zap, give it a 3/4 score. No, they weren't brave. Give it 0 or 2 or 3 if it's crap. Stop people from spending 7 quid on it. Go and buy the Mr. Men books, because they're far more interesting and more fun to read to a kid than this stupid thing. So no Mr. Bounce, no thanks. Mr. Bounce right off it for me. No.
Yeah, exactly. Rubbish. Yeah. Oh, there we go. That's
Mr.
High Bouncer.
No.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mr. Grumpy reviewed it and he did not like it. Mr.
I really didn't. I really did not. Oh, dear. There we go. That's the High Bouncer. Let's continue our trip down Retro Past Lane with our next game. All right, so our next one up, going all the way back to issue 3, is Stringer. This is Stringer, Graham. Stringer.
Weird thing, this.
It's from Addictive Games, and it's £6.95. And for that £6.95, you get a 42% game. That's what you get.
That sounds like that.
It's a proper throwback, this, to old-style platform and ladders-type games. With just an added pinch of creepy voyeurism thrown in for good measure.
Yeah, it's a bit weird.
Yeah. So this was created by Steve Wiggins. We've seen Mr. Wiggins before. He did that really odd Taskmaster. Do you remember that?
I remember that, yeah.
The one where you sort of, the Iron Maiden, playing the Iron Maiden person, walking around and wizards and stuff. But he also, before our time, he did, worth mentioning, he did High Noon as well.
Okay.
So remember High Noon, the Ocean released High Noon. But this is quite different to either of those, though. I couldn't really find much in the way of instructions for this. I could find the cover, but no instruction. But from the write-up on Moby Games, you play as a photographer this is the first line. It says, you play as a photographer who likes taking pictures of women for his own enjoyment.
Okay, that's never good.
No.
That's never a good start.
That's not good. I'm not actually sure, though, if that is actually the story, because the Zap one gives it something else. But also, weirdly, this was renamed and re-released on budget a year later by Codemasters, never got reviewed in Zap, as a game called Mr. Angry.
Okay, weird.
So, the instructions to Mr. Angry, this is this. So it's the same game, but it's just a different title. So set in a hotel, your task as a photojournalist is to snatch an exclusive shot of a glamour girl staying somewhere in the hotel. You must first collect your camera, flash, press pass, and the key to her room, all hidden in other rooms. Complete your assignment by the editor's deadline, which is displayed at the bottom of the screen. The hotel staff, porters, waiters, purser, and cook don't like you rushing around the hotel opening doors, and neither does Mr. Angry. So essentially the guy that comes after you, they've turned him into the main character of this. It's really weird. So it's essentially the same, but the Zap review of the time for this game, Stringer, refers to the glamour girl as Polly Platinum. I don't know. There's weirdness going on here. Whatever the story is, though, it's a really very simple platform and ladders game, but it's got a weird bit of dash of, let's say, elevator action thrown in the opening doors. Remember, it's kind of a bit like that where you do that. There are 10 single screen levels to make your way through. When the game starts, we have a fairly green intro screen. That intro screen is very green. He likes his green. And it's got a picture of our photographer standing there, just graphics, just standing there, and with some, you know, options or something. Or press fire, it says. Press fire starts the game, and we start in the bottom right. And the level takes up the majority of the screen. There's some UI at the top and the bottom. At the top is your score and icons. Well, you can't see them just yet, but the icons for the objects you've collected, they'll appear when you collect them. At the bottom is the level you're on, in case you forgot, the timer for your deadline, and the high score. The game itself portrays the interior of a hotel with four levels. The levels are connected by ladders and later by lifts moving slowly up and down. There are a load of yellow doors across the levels, and your job is to wander around and open the doors in order to find the four objects. You've no idea where they are. They could be in any of the doors. The only one they can't be in is the top left one, because that's where Polly Platinum or the Glamour Girl or whatever it is exists. Mm. So controls are simple enough. Left and right to walk, up and down to go up and down the ladders, and fire to jump. In front of a door, if you press up to face it and then press fire to open it, then it'll open and you might reveal an object, or you might reveal nothing. If there's an item in there, you can press up and fire again to collect it. Trailing after you the whole time is the hotel porter. He comes onto the screen just after a few seconds after you start walking, and he sort of randomly wanders about up the ladders and stuff like that, and he's a pain in the ass. Also, behind one of the doors is a guest in their pajamas, the eponymous Mr. Angry from the re-release. If you open that door, then they will chase you as well. So there's now two people sort of roaming around, coming after you and chasing you. Should they make contact with you, then you lose one of your three lives and you will start the level over entirely again. If you fall at all, even off the ladder, even if you don't line up coming off the ladder to the level that you're on, you fall down one rung, you lose a life. He's like, hey, he falls over and you must start again. It's one of those. It's a very annoying, this. Losing a life is very annoying. You can jump through the enemies, weirdly. You have a bit of a mighty jump.
Yeah,
and you can
crazy.
Sort of jump past them, but half the time they'll just spin round and grab you. But sometimes they won't, and you can get away from them. Should you have to start the level again, it's annoying because the level is randomized. The objects are randomized across the level. So you can't learn where they are. I guess this adds a challenge, but it can't. So the only one that doesn't is the woman's room is always top left. Your objects could be anywhere. Mr. Angry could be anywhere. You've no idea. There's no clue as to what is anything is behind anything. You just have to go around and open them. So there's no skill to this. It's just pure luck. It's essentially what's the Noel Edmonds box opening game? It's that Deal or No Deal. It's
like Deal or No Deal.
There's no skill. You can guess and stuff, but it's just you're opening doors, opening boxes, whatever. Should you collect all the objects, then you can open her door, and then you sort of bend down and take a photo. And it kind of just waits there, and you click, and you're onto the next more difficult level. The graphics for this, well, they're large and chunky. I guess is the best way to describe them. They're very large. They're very of the time. Some okay animation, I guess, on the characters wandering about. And when you jump around, it's all right. I mean, there's a bit of character to them. It's quite nice. It's kind of like what we saw in that the other game you did, the Taskmaster. But the background is very plain. The gameplay is pretty slow and frustrating, really. And I also didn't really enjoy playing a paparazzi. So that was also something, I found a bit unpleasant about this. I don't want to play a paparazzi. I hate them. It's an odd premise for a game, and to be fair, I found it all a bit dull and boring very quickly. It's not much movement this one from Space Panic, I guess, the first platformer. Well, you can jump, but and I'll just put it this way: if I want something like this, if I want a platform and ladders game, I'm gonna go play Burger Time or Mr. Wimpy, because it's the best one. It's far better than this, because it's just the best thing. It's I don't know, Donkey Kong or something. I'm going to play Diddy Kong 2 or whatever. I'm going to play one of them because Burger Time is way better and it's got more fun. It's got eggs and stuff and bacon and things like that. And it's a bit of a laugh. And there's more to do. And there is skill in that because you're obviously knocking the things down. This is just down to pure luck, whether you get Mr. Angry or not, or whether you find the four things. I mean, sometimes I went through and found the first four doors. It was like, hey, that's good. Next time I couldn't find anyone. I got Mr. Angry dead. I don't like randomized chance. It annoys me. No. So ultimately, it's very forgettable, this. Not very good. Awful music too. Awful single channel music that just drones on and on. no, 42%, I guess, for the time, yeah, probably about right, maybe for issue three. It's not much to it, is there? But it's a bit of a late entry, I guess, into the ladders, sort of platforms and ladders stuff when there's better games out there. Didn't like it very much. What about you?
Yeah, same. I'm not much more to add. It was a crappy game. It looked horrible, didn't it? Yeah. It had a weird pervy quality about the whole thing, if I was honest, which made it feel a bit unpalatable and not very nice. Annoying sound all the way through, really daft gameplay. The movement was really annoying as well. You know, one wrong move and you drop down dead, and it's just like, oh, it's so tedious. Everything seemed to kill you really easily. And the idea of the game is just a bit tasteless and a bit naff in whatever format that comes in. There was a look and feel. It reminded me weirdly of, and I thought initially is what it was, or at least how it might play, was like the old Mario game on the CDI where you had to just open and close all the different doors.
Oh, Hotel Mario.
Yeah, it reminded me. I thought it might be that. And I thought, when I initially saw it, I thought, oh, maybe it's that. Soon disappointed me. You know, I was just kind of a super sleuth perv trying to sort of, who was periodically getting menaced by people coming out of rooms. No, it had a look and feel. It had a tone. Not a tone I could get behind. I just didn't enjoy it. And I don't think, I would never have enjoyed it back then either. It felt a bit like a dirty secret game. Not for me, this one. Not for me at all.
And you were wearing a Mac, aren't you? Wearing a dirty brown Mac.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a bit of it. Just, you know, you play a pervert going around opening doors and taking photographs. It's like, I don't think I want to do that. Thanks.
No. There we go. Stringer, or Mr. Angry, as it will go on to be called. You may know
as. Angry.
Yeah, no wonder. Let's say no more about that one. Let's move on. And Graham, it's down to you to talk about Chopper.
So this was a budget game, a really weirdly priced early budget game, £2.50. So maybe one of the first budget games, actually.
That's expensive for budget back then. I was getting Pedro for £1.99, for God's sake.
Well, it's only 51p more, isn't it? But it's the same time. It got 56% at the time in Zap and issue three. This was published by Creative Sparks. The copyright is Thorn EMI Computer Software. The developer is Seven Software. I didn't catch any names out of any of that either. There's not a lot of text in it.
No.
This was a port from the Oric, according to the Zap review at the time. I'm guessing that's the Oric 1 or the Oric Atmos, one of the two. Unless that's the same thing. I don't know enough about Orics to know. They didn't really like it, that has to be said. The game is essentially a side-scrolling shooter-type deal spread across four sections, with some of them used multiple times. Oddly, you scroll from right to left, controlling your chopper with up and down and fire to shoot. So you can't actually move in the screen. It's just up or down. It's a bit weird, that. A bit weird. And annoying. I'm not sure why, but you are sort of hard justified to the right of the screen. The UI is very basic, Commodore font stuff. Tells you your sort of section where you're at the top, and then your score and lives and high score at the bottom. Very standard stuff here. Mm-hmm. This was clearly someone's first game, I think. The main window is the game, such as it is. You fly your chopper. I say fly. You navigate your chopper up and down only, shooting at the helicopters that come towards you from the left-hand side and the odd aeroplane that flies and shoots at you. At the bottom of the game window is the brown single-colour landscape. The background has some stars in it. Enemies fly on in waves of less than eight, of course. Avoid and shoot enough of those and you'll head to the first bonus section where you need to refuel your helicopter in midair by guiding your fuel line nozzle into the awaiting tanker pipe. Exciting.
Exciting.
Do that. And it's section two, which looks a lot like section one, only you have oddly shaped balloons and airships to avoid.
It's
weird. You can't shoot them. You've just got to dodge them.
Yep.
And one of those balloons looks really weirdly shaped. I'll just leave it there.
Chopper.
Yeah. So if you do that, and then it's another refueling bonus section with the plane slightly lower on the screen, challenging that when they do that. And then it's the section three, which is the final section where you must shoot the enemy reactor that is embedded in a reddish mountainside thing. There's three enemy helicopters that will aim to stop you, with two of them following your every movement, which makes it near on impossible to do.
Yep.
So you're not really, I don't think you can do that last bit. I don't think it's possible, but that's how it works. And that's it. So you've got essentially got four screens to go through. Mm-hmm. Graphics for the enemy sprites and the helicopters are very basic, sort of simple two-color sprites. I guess they're a total facsimile of the Oric graphics in it, so nothing special there. I suppose they look helicopter-shaped. I'll give you that. Yeah. There's no other real detail to speak of. All the sounds are very basic, although it does sound like a helicopter doing the obligatory noise filter noise.
Yep.
So it does that, and you've got like what looked like to me like jetpack style weaponry, so this like giant laser beam shoots out across them, shoots things down. But nah, £2.50 didn't buy you a whole lot of fun, it seemed to me. This was a dreary port from a crappy computer, and unwelcome even for budget money. I didn't like it, and I was never going to. And I don't think they, around this time, you've already got Mega Apocalypse, I think, and a few of the games that are way better than this on the C64. There's no space for this rubbish. So no, £2.50 is too expensive for it. I didn't like it at all. And it should have got lower percentage. This is not 50% good. This is 25% at best. No, it's a crap conversion. You know, so start as you mean to go on Zap, but maybe they didn't. But did you get along with it at all? Or is it the same for you?
No. Issue 3 had Drop Zone in it.
Oh, there you go. So it's just stupid.
So then you got this. Even at £2.50, it's like, no, it's just still expensive for a budget game. No, it's a very odd mishmash of a right-to-left horizontal shooter. Dodge him up and then destroy the base somehow. Intercut with some bonus screens where you refuel for no real reason because you don't have any fuel.
Because it was something to do.
It's like bonus points, isn't it? I guess an early high score chaser. I guess there's a bit of a decent sense of pace. It's so simple as to be almost not there. It's like so
it's very
thin.
Simple.
It's so thin. Yeah. It's like, what? Did I, you know, is this a game?
It's the easiest to control game we've come across in ages. Up and down.
Up and down and fire. Also, as well, you fire a massive line out, don't you, as well? And you can't.
You do.
But the enemy helicopters come at you dead fast and shoot dead.
Yeah, and I meant to say, you can't shoot and move at the same time, which is stupid.
No. Yeah, you can't. Amusingly, what I found this is they call this a scramble type game in Zap.
Nothing like scramble.
No, it's not, but they call it that. Because it showed, I like looking at some of these early ones, because it shows they haven't got the terminology for shoot 'em ups yet.
Yeah.
Because it's a shoot 'em up. It's a shoot 'em up.
Yeah.
It's a shmup. Yeah. I can't say, but I don't know. I didn't mind this. It's too simple to mind. It's like, it's barely anything there. You're like,
it's
very early budget game. £2.50, tad pricey against the £1.99 for the day.
Yeah, you know, you're not going to have any fun with it, though. It's just, you know, it's going to be over with very quickly.
It's just very basic. Very basic and of its time. And clearly, like you said, probably a straight port from the Auric Atmos, which where this would probably maybe fare better because there's probably not as much competition out there. But in the same month, you got Drop Zone.
Yeah.
Well. Well.
Archie MacLean, it ain't.
No. This is Mexican non-equivalent brother did this.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah.
This is more like MacLean chips.
This is not the actual MacLean.
No, it's not. There we go. Chopper. Get to the chopper. No, probably don't, actually.
Don't.
Probably not worth it. No. Although I will say, it's better than Blue Thunder.
That's not saying much, is it?
No, it's not. But I will say it is a better chopper game. It is a better helicopter game than Blue Thunder.
We're not even far from it. We've had Airwolf, I think, already, haven't we, as well?
Airwolf was episode 1. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so
that was issue 1.
Chopper versus Airwolf.
No.
Okay.
No. No, it's not. No. It's a good player.
Chopper. Bye, Chopper.
Chopper. I'm down here, Chopper.
Chopper. I'm here. Down here, Chopper. Nobby. I'm down here, Nobby.
I knew you'd think of that. That's what I was saying.
Nobby. Nobby. I'm down here.
Oh, I bet that's made Gary laugh. Anyway, there we go. That's enough of Chopper. Let's move on to our next game. So there we go. That's that one. Let's move on. We've got our next game up. Two still to cover. This one is Spooks. Spooks, Graham. This is £1. Yes.
Ooh, it's Spooks.
It's £1.99. And this got 70%. 70%.
Okay.
This came from Mastertronic. Issue 3 it was reviewed in. And this is a scary, haunting tale of exorcism and aimless wandering.
Scary.
This was created by Nigel P. Johnston. He did all the graphics, all the code, all the music, all the, everything. So a true one-man band of a developer. He just did the whole lot. It's just, you know, a studio
everything.
Working with anyone else. Okay. He's also, I'd noted as well, we've covered Nigel Johnston before. We might have mentioned him because he did Captive way back in issue 4. We actually looked at that one, and this is very similar to Captive. You'll see as we go through this. But he seemed to have a bit of an unhealthy obsession with Humpty Dumpty.
I noticed that when I looked through the games.
By the looks of things, because his previous three games were Engineer Humpty, Humpty Dumpty Meets the Fuzzy Wuzzies, and Humpty in the Garden.
Okay. Maybe he had a great fall at some point and just, you know, triggered him.
For me, it's just too much egg-based tomfoolery than I can... There can never be
that much egg-based tomfoolery. Come on.
That's too much. Humpty Dumpty Meets the Fuzzy Wuzzies. I mean...
To me, that sounds like a euphemism that I don't want to be involved with.
True. Sounds like some kind of other egg.
Don't want to be involved in any of your shenanigans.
None of them. Anyway, like I said, he did go on to make Captive, though. He had a bit of a change. And in between the Humpty obsession and Captive, there was Spooks. This one. So this is clearly an early precursor to that Captive. So because it's yet another wander about and use a numbered menu to do these type of game. That's what this is. Mate, I was thinking whether these and Captive were an inspiration for the Magic Knight games, do you think, maybe?
I think there's more than a inference. When I saw the layout, I was like, well, come on, that's very similar.
Yeah, but the first Magic Knight Finders Keepers was issue 5. So maybe just two people landing on similar ideas at the same time. These things do happen. We see that sort of, you know, time and again, but who knows? Anyway, Spooks. The story here is that in this is straight from the manual, by the way, in this epic, scrolling, fast-moving adventure, would they be words you'd use for this, Graham?
I'm thinking there's some artistic license being applied there.
Yeah, just the instructions words, they're not mine. You must exorcise the ghoul-infested mansion that has been left to you by your great aunt. As you go about your grisly work, you find a musty old book, The Layman's Guide to the Spirit World, that gives some handy hints on what to do in this game, such as blue keys open blue doors, and so
it's
on.
It's always useful to know. That's what it did.
That's what it does,
God for that.
There's other clues as well. When the game loads, we get quite a nice enough loading screen. It's quite nice, sort of a jumping character. It's all right. It's very of its time, but it's okay.
Yeah, totally.
It's a very Mastertronic loading screen. They always had Mastertronic loading screens, I seem to remember.
They did, yeah.
And then when it loads, we get a twee music of the title screen. It's very twee, lots of twee music.
Very twee.
And some animated information on the ghosts that lurk in the mansion, and they're called such things as Zingzong and Strook, amongst others.
Okay.
Whatever, I don't know.
May as well be.
May as well, yeah. It's just just hit the keyboard. literally. The
You're going to be a... Zunk! Hey, that's good. Hey.
The title screen is laid out the same as the game. There's two windows on the screen. One on the left has the ghost in at the moment, and the one on the right has all the UI info and the commands at your disposal, which you will be able to use during the game. These commands are do nothing, handy, then quit game. Never put that as your second option. The amount of times I clicked on that bloody thing.
Yeah, same. Stupid.
So trying to move down and quit. No, I don't want to quit. And it goes, you've got 100 seconds. I was like, how fast is that going? I don't want to quit. But maybe I should have. Then there's pick up, there's drop, there's play tune, there's eat item, wear item, drop marker, throw item, and switch on.
Okay.
There's also your energy, which starts at 100. The number of musical boxes you have, because the point of this game, the only way to exercise the house is to find the 8 musical boxes which contain the Death March. Dun, dun, Chirpy. Dun, 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 dun. I presume.
That's the Star Wars Death March, but they're all the same Death Matches.
Yeah, it's just a Death March, isn't it? It's just going to be something. I bet if you found them, I bet it does play that. I never did, but I bet it does. Which needs to be played, because they need to be played at the exit to get rid of all the ghosts. Only at the exit. And there's your decision time, which is a weird thing. I think that's like how long you've got to actually make a choice. Yeah, you can't be too long in this menu. No.
No, not too long.
I want time. Underneath this, there's the room type you're in, for reasons. The high score, which is the completion percentage, and that's it. Pressing fire gets us going, and the left window now fills in with a blocky flick screen. I thought this was fast scrolling.
Yeah.
It's annoying flick screen as well. It's like you move an inch and it says, I'm moving, I'm flicking.
It depends how fast it's based on other things that are fast, isn't it?
I guess so. And this is a character-based affair. It looks like one of these games. It's all the map is made up of characters. It's just one of those. It's an old thing. Your little man starts in the bottom left of the mansion. You must wander about picking up stuff. I picked up a bed at one point.
He's a strong man who picks up stuff.
Just carried around a bed and a massive weight. I was like, good Lord, this guy's buff.
He's strong.
Absolutely. And I looked at his name. It was Marcus Phoenix. He's Burl. Pure Burl, this boy.
Pure Burl. Bed Burl.
Yeah, so he's picking up stuff like beds and finding keys and the like, and blue keys, obviously, to open blue doors. So you're just wondering about, it's all 2D, it's top-down, kind of, not representational is a sort of way to kind of describe this. You do this by pressing fire over items, which then you bring up the aforementioned list of options. You can choose, and you choose pick up, and that picks stuff up. Although you have to go through a convoluted system where you have to say which, because you only carry 3 items, you've got to say which one you're going to put it in. It's a bit, just pick it up. and put it in one of the empty ones. I mean, that would be the sensible thing, I would think.
You know, the just, obvious thing to do, yeah.
If I've got an empty space, it doesn't matter which one it's in, just put it in there. You can also pick up hot coals. I did that, and then I died immediately.
Yeah, don't pick up hot coals.
You'd drop them. You wouldn't die. You'd have burnt hands, but you wouldn't die. But I was dead. As you wander about, where the options appear in the right-hand window, an ever-appearing map. So if you're not sort of designed to do something, there'll be a map appearing, sort of being drawn out, tracing your progress. And the stuff like that. As every now and again, a ghost will materialise. It's sort of about this sort of flickery...
As they do.
Bright, sort of thing. And it's sort of just... They just wander. They just float about annoyingly, getting in your way. Just
ghost,
just
ghosting, doing ghost stuff.
Ghosting about, yeah. But if they touch you, game over.
Yeah.
There's no
unforgiving.
It's just boom, dead. You're dead. That's it. Game over. And that's it. So that's it, really. I mean, if you wonder, there's not much to this. I guess for early 1985, this is pretty inventive and I suppose decent for two quid. It's a decent little game here for £2. But it's frustrating to play now. It's not forgiving and it's frustrating and a bit ugly. Trying to avoid the ghost or kill them is painful. It's like you've got to go into your menu, select throw item, don't press quit game. The menu, it take time, and in that time, you're usually dead.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. Dead.
Yeah, I guess if you like these kind of wander around, Magic Knight, captive type games where you've got a menu, you know, those kind of things, it picks stuff up, and that, you know, it's a bit more. There's a bit more to do than things like Everyone's a Wally and those kind of collectathons. This you've got to kind of work out what to do with what item in what place and all that sort of stuff. Then you might like this if you don't mind. It's a bit incredibly frustrating though. You might get some enjoyment out of this. It's nothing to, but now it's nothing more than a bit of a curio from back then. It's kind of, you can see that kind of lineage of where these games were starting to sort of ideas were percolating, like, you know, these kind of trying to make a sort of interactive adventure game with, I mean, you know, point and click menus, I guess. So, you know, you could see these kind of experiments happening. This is one of those ones that was in that mold, I guess. But it's quickly superseded, I think, by Master of Magic when that comes along and does a better job of it. We did a similar thing, only a whole lot better. It's not terrible. It's probably worth the 70% for £2 because there's quite a lot of ugly game here. But it's just not my cup of tea. It's just not. It's a bit boring and a bit frustrating these days. But I can see back then why it would get 70%. It is what it is. Just £2 of adventure. What did you think?
So what did I think? Wow, is what I thought. Music, so shrill. It would make mice attack each other. Music so high-pitched, it would cause dogs to howl. Music so shrill that whales started beaching. Music so shrill that grasshoppers began to form some kind of angry militia. So high-pitched. Character graphics with a little man exploring. Probably a lot to go at if you like that kind of thing, like you say. At least you could turn the music off for almost total silence, which is probably preferable to the ear shrill splitting nightmare that is in there. But it's of its time, that kind of thing. A lot of the games had that kind of... Why they operate that register, I don't know. Just, you know, lower it down a couple of octaves for me.
Yeah.
Very of its time. But, you know, the setting is, you know, there's some good ideas, I suppose, in there if you think about it. Looking around a spooky mansion doing spooky stuff is the mainstay of almost every Luigi game.
Yeah.
So you know, and that's kind of what this is. Other adventure games of this type. So maybe this is kind of the granddaddy, super granddaddy, great granddaddy of some of those ideas, some of those games. Not necessarily implemented brilliantly, but it's implemented of its time. I quite like some of the things in there. The presentation is very character-based and basic, so graphics are going to be that way. But that actually keeps things kind of simpler in its own way. And so the visual logic is quite simple to understand. You know what you're doing. There's a map, there's rooms to explore, you go around, and that's nice, not terrible. And I like the fact that you kind of build a map as you go. So there's little ideas in there that, you know, and like you said, later down the line, this kind of idea is totally taken by Finders Keepers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's an early promising start for this kind of game. It's occurring a lot earlier than I thought. And for Mastertronic, because normally at this point, Mastertronic games would now, you know, very much £2 worth of entertainment. You probably get a bit more than your average out of this for £2, but it's just of its time. You know, it's nothing doing anything great. The music's horrible. The visuals are really basic. And everything kind of operates. And it's silly that you can't shoot things with the fire button on the joystick. You have to press a key to do that. Would have made sense. So there's sort of silly control mistakes, but it's passable. I don't think, 70% is alarmingly high, I have to say, for a game that's principally just character graphics and some shuffling about. But maybe there's a bit to explore and it's the exploration part. But the weird thing is they gave it 70%, but they didn't really like it that much when I read the comments from...
Yeah, Jazz Rignall and I think the other two were a bit more forgiving of it.
Yeah, but I would say, you know, in those early days, for £2, this would probably get you some, you know, it's if you look around at some of the other games that are around at that time, This one, you've got a lot to explore and look around, and that's quite interesting for a game of that time. For £2, especially, you know, you wouldn't have been upset if you'd have got this home with your pocket money and you'd have been stuck in there, and it would have given you something different to do. So I know it's different to arcade style games of that time. So I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
And it is £2. So yeah, it was all right, but it's not going to, I had to turn the music off because, you know, it was quite high pitched, that, you know, even for me. And my hearing's shot. So for me to be able to hear it that high pitched, goodness.
It's just occurred to me as well that you could also draw a line probably from this to going backwards to the Adventure on the Atari 2600.
Yeah.
The classic one. Probably, you know, similar sort of thing, isn't it? Wandering around.
Yeah, totally. It's not bad. It's not amazing. It's too good for its price.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
There we go. Spooks. I suppose it's a bit spooky. There we go. We've still got one more game left, though, to cover from back then. We haven't covered them all, though, but just for this episode, still one more to go. So let's get to that. And Graham, it's over to you. We're going through time. We're going into issue 4. Dig Dug. Tell us about Dig Dug.
Yeah, we've moved into issue 4 now of the games that we didn't do. This is Dig Dug. It's $9.95, which is quite high price, but I suppose it's an arcade license. Mm. And it's got 54%, which is actually a bit odd. Okay, so maybe, you know, something's not quite right, maybe. Bit of a blast from the past. Dig Dug is a maze arcade video game developed by Namco in 1981 and released in 1982 in North America by Atari. The player controls Dig Dug to defeat all the enemies per stage by either inflating them to bursting or crushing them underneath rocks. This is from the arcade, by the way, from the wiki. Dig Dug was planned and designed by Masahisa Ikigami with the help from Galaga creator Shigeru Yokoyama. It was programmed for the Namco Galaga arcade board by Shikuchi Fukutani, who worked on many of Namco's earlier arcade games, along with Toshio Sakai. The music was composed by Yuriko Kino, including the character movement jingle, at executive's request, as her first Namco game. Namco heavily marketed it as a strategic digging game. Strategic?
I can dig it.
Upon release, Dig Dug was well received by critics for its addictive gameplay, cute characters, and strategy. During the golden age of arcade video games, it was globally successful, including as the second highest grossing arcade game in 1982 in Japan. It prompted a long series of sequels and spin-offs, including the Mr. Driller series for several platforms. It is in many Namco video game compilations for many systems, and that, you ain't wrong there. This is out on everything.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything this isn't out on.
Mm-hmm.
Let's turn our attention then to the C64 one. There is a little bit of blurb that goes with this. I'm going to go through the blurb because it's a 1982 game. You know, we should, shouldn't we?
Mm-hmm.
So in the blurb for the C64 one, it says, how many veggies can Dig Dug dig? Dodge and blast the perilous pukas and bounce boulders on the fiery figars as you burrow your way through a subterranean maze of deadly passages. Fruits and veggies are your passion, but it's a dangerous business trying to farm surrounded by the deadly denizens of the deep. Dig it. Can you dig it?
I do dig it.
This, just because we like to list the features, this says it features exciting arcade quality graphics and sound, the complete arcade game on your home computer, action, danger, and excitement.
Ooh.
So the game then, according to for the C64, and there's only a short blurb for this, Dig Dug starts each game with 5 lives after he burrows to the center of the earth on his own. Use the controls to send him anywhere you want. When he enters a tunnel where a puka is lurking, the monster will give chase. The puka can be exploded by quick use of the pump. A brief contact with the pump will stun the beast, and a longer contact will inflate it until it explodes. Be careful, trying to slip past the stunned monster. If Dig Dug is touched, he gets stunned himself. Figars can be handled in almost the same way, but since they breathe fire, you must be far more careful with your approach. In fact, a Figar's fire will even burn through the earth, so make sure you're well out of range.
Mm.
Another attack is to drop rocks on the creatures. To do this, you just jump tunnel under a rock while a monster is chasing you. If your timing is right, the monster will get squashed. Pukas and Figars are very strange creatures. If they aren't destroyed quickly in the round, they turn into ghosts and start attacking directly through the earth. They rematerialize as soon as they enter a new tunnel. After 2 rocks have fallen in any round, bonus veggies appear in the center of the earth and stay there for 10 seconds. If Dig Dug can get to them in time, bonus points will be awarded. That's principally it. You control it in port 1. That shows you how old this game is when you control it in port 1, doesn't it? For some reason. That's the Dig Dug blurb for the C64. It's a very early arcade conversion. I know Zap gave it 50-odd%, but I think it's actually pretty good. It's a little bit wider in resolution, obviously, because it's the C64 in multicolor mode, which means it's going to have pixels that are twice as wide as normal pixels. Yeah. That's how you get the extra colour. Okay. And it's a tad slower, and it does have a little bit of slowdown on occasion, but principally, this is the same game. Dig around, pump or drop rocks on the enemies where you can, and get to the next level, or the next scene, whatever they call it. Mm-hmm. A glaring omission for the C64 is the lack of a proper high score table, which is a bit of a no-no for an arcade port.
Yeah, it's weird. Really odd.
So, because that's the one thing that these games really, and that's the only thing really that you should have.
It's a high score chaser, yeah, so...
Yeah, so to not be able to chase your high scores, bit stupid, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Anyway, you control Doug with your joystick. Is he Dig? Doug, is that his name or is he Doug? I don't know, because it would be D-O-U-G, wouldn't it? I never really thought about it, but anyway. You control your character, Dig, Doug, Doug, Dig, Dougie, Dig, Dig, Doug, with your joystick up, down, left, right, like the arcade. Remember, you can't do diagonals in this game because it's not designed that way. And the fire button is your pumper, your weapon, that kind of thing. Very simple UI. At the top, it tells you which player is up. I've always liked that. One up, two up.
Yeah,
bottom
yeah.
row is the number of Duggies you have you left, and the current round you're playing. And that's principally how it works. That's it. As was more common at the time, and I think this is probably more of an Atari 8-bit port than directly from the arcade, actually, because all of the Atari ports look exactly like this one, more so than this one, including the 2600.
Yeah.
So, but all the core gameplay is here. The sound is basically the same. It's quite basic, because the arcade sound is not, you know, it's not something to break out into some kind of song. It's just, you know, very, very, it's kind of arcade muffled tone, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Very square wave, I think. Anyway, so the sound is basically the same. The game is, I think, playable. Now, for a bit of histrionics, this was probably one of the first games I played on the C64, principally because it was on that famous Turbo Tape that everybody had. So yes. Dig Dug was on that Turbo Tape, along with Fort Apocalypse, Black Hawk, Buck Rogers. They were all on it, and Dig Dug was on there. So that was kind of the first batch of games, pirate games, in fact, really, that I got. And so I definitely played this. And because of the nature of that was the collection of games that I had, and I didn't have money to go and buy lots of others, I played the hell out of this back then, because it's an easy game to get into and just play, and it requires no more brain power, and it's this frustrating, and it has the same logic as some of the other games of this type. There's a few that have run around the sort of, I guess Dig Dug is run around the caves and you know, work your way through that kind of thing. There's another game that's a lot like, there's loads of arcades actually that's a lot. This, I don't know why I'm trying to single one out. I'm trying to think there's one particular, but there's a bunch of games that are kind of like this. And this is just of that type. It's ultimately very playable because it's literally so easy to get into, because there's not a great deal to it.
Yeah.
Navigate through, don't get squashed by the rocks, try and make your way through and get all the bits and bobs and just avoid the enemies in the game. I mean, that's it. There's no more to it than that. Mm-hmm. So C64 version, graphically, it's okay. The sprites are okay. They're a bit wide and they look a bit like an Atari, so they look a bit wide and blocky. It is wide. Mm-hmm. And the colour schemes on it are okay. There's the screen on the classic arcade and everything else is kind of split into tonal colours. So the further down you go, the sort of the colour changes on the screen. I think it's split into three or four colours. I think three. But the widths between them on the C64 are quite thin, whereas on the other versions, they're a bit wider. But again, remember, this is kind of spread across. So the arcade is kind of thinner because it's square pixels. This is just, imagine the arcade's been widened, and you get the idea of this. It's widened and squashed a bit. That doesn't massively affect the way the game plays, but it is a little bit slower than it's quite a bit slower than the arcade and the C64 version. And that's just a limitation of what you've got. You know, that's just it. Now, it doesn't generally change its look. You know, the backgrounds do kind of change color a little bit as you get further into the screens. And obviously the rocks are in different positions and everything else, but it is, you know, you just work. I know, I don't know how many scenes there are in it, because I don't know how far, I can't honestly remember how far I've ever got in this game, because it just felt to me like it went on forever. You know, no matter how far you got, there was always going to be something else to dig. So as one of the first games I've played, I haven't got bad things to say about this. It's just dead simple of a very simple arcade, and the arcade still remains playable like this game. It's a classic playable game with a very easy central conceit that kind of has that arcade addictive quality, because you just want to do better. But without that score tracking on the C64, that's a category one error, isn't it? You can't see how good you've done.
Yeah.
A bit silly, that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the only footnote here. So, I mean, I like Dig Dug. It's all right. I think it deserved a bit more than the score that Zap gave it, because it isn't a bad conversion of the arcade. It's not terrible. But the footnote here is that it was remade in 2023 as Dig Dug Revival by Lucia Caminati. Luca has created some amazing remakes, and in this version of Dig Dug, the playfields in it are procedurally generated, and it's actually been graphically realigned to be more like the arcade, so it's not quite as wide. And it's all a bit faster as well. So, you know, go and download that. It's free. It's out there on public domain. We can share the link for you. It's out on itch, is it? Itch.io, whatever they call that.
Yeah, yeah.
We can share the link to that. It's a really great job. And Luke has done quite a few other games of that kind of, you know, retro remakes. There's a couple, I think he's done there's a few on there. We'll put the link to the page on Lemon. You can go and check them out. There's some really good ones in there. And his version is very good and very playable. Dig Dug harks back to a simpler game design, you know, very simple. So very of its time. Pac-Man, those kind of single character, got to get in and do stuff, go around a maze, go and find a thing, avoid the baddies. There's loads of them. This is along the same lines as Donkey Kong and all of those kind of things. And actually aligned with that kind of idea. Just as a final thing, the current emulator C64 record score is 2,020,200 points. That's on an emulator. Now, the reason I mention that is because there is no real hardware score on Twin Galaxies for the C64 for Dig Dug. People who like to score high scores and can prove it, go do your thing, because you could have your name on the Twin Galaxies scoreboard there, because there is no real hardware score for the C64 for Dig Dug. Like every other format's got one, not that one. So weird. I thought that was quite interesting. Weird. So anyway, that's my take on Dig Dug. You know, I've always liked it. What's not to like? It's dead simple. But what about you? I mean, I hate it for all I know.
It's Dig Dug. It's Dig Dug, isn't it? It's a bit of a slow and squatter version of Dig Dug, but it's like someone dropped one of the rocks from the game on this version. It got a bit slow and muddled by it. It's like, so he's chasing the arcade version. He got a rock dropped on it. It looks like Dig Dug. Sounds like Dig Dug. It just doesn't have, this version just didn't have, I played the arcade version, it didn't have the snappiness or speed. I think C64 would have been able to handle it. I think, and it can, if you did that Dig Dug revival, it could have done it, but it's 1983. But there's also another issue, you can't shoot through the small gaps to your pump sort of thing. It's not quite as long as the arcade, and it just doesn't quite reach, it doesn't go through the small gaps.
More limiting.
It's kind of handy. There's a couple of other elements, like you said, the most glaring of which is the lack of a high score table. I know it's not going to say, but if you're playing it for a while, you want to sort of record those high scores, don't you? But I guess, you know, 1983, this was released. Obviously, it took a couple of years to travel over the Atlantic, but it took 1983. I think this would have felt pretty impressive playing this in your own home. If you looked at something like the Atari 2600 versions and things like that, you'd be like, this looks and sounds like Dig Dug. It's all intents and purposes, Dig Dug. If it's all you had at the time, and it was, because I had that same turbo tape, everybody had it. I think it must have gone around our school. Every C64 owner got that tape. Just taped it, and just that was that. I'd imagine you get quite a lot of enjoyment out of this, because the core thing about Dig Dug, it allows you to pump monsters until they explode.
Yep.
This is a mechanic that is sorely missing from just about every other game ever since. I think it's one of those mechanics that should have been in. The closest I can think that does something similar, but it's more horrible, is a game called Siphon Filter on the PlayStation 1, where you could taser people until they just burst into flames.
Jamming.
Yeah. But this notion of just being able to, because it's horrible, isn't it? You can pump, 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 bah. Like, oh.
Yeah, pop.
Poor little creatures. It's an horrible thing.
Little fire guys, yeah.
But yeah, so pumping and exploding, it's always good fun to do that. So Dig Dug is a bit pricey, and maybe that's affected the price.
Yeah,
maybe. £10 for a Dig Dug in 1985.
Quite a lot.
Yeah, maybe if this had been released at a budget price, because, and again, like I said, it's 2 years old. It's not a new version of it. If they'd have done a new version, maybe, don't know. But it's all right, it's Dig Dug. Yeah. It's a decent version of Dig Dug. It's just a bit slower and squatter. But there you go.
Yeah, no argument there.
Yeah. So there you go. That's our six games. Some of them were okay. Some of them were not. But it's just going back and picking these little oddities up.
Little loose ends.
So, you know, I think the worst one we played was probably that high bouncer.
Yeah, that was not really a game, was it?
It's barely a game. And I think probably the best one was probably Spelunker.
Yeah, Spelunker was good. And funnily enough, it's amazing that at least some of those games, at least two or three of them, have been remade. Modern remakes exist of Spelunker and of Dig Dug. It's quite crazy,
yeah.
That.
Yeah, there you go. So there you go. That's hopefully you've enjoyed that, this little sort of sojourn back into the past, this Back to the Past special. You know, hopefully we are still working, unfortunately, so there is another special coming next week. So we're just getting these out. So you've got something to listen to. We don't want to leave you in the dark and in the lurch in the middle of thing. We're just getting going with 1990, but just hold in there. We'll get back to it. And so we will be back. But next week, there's something else. And then hopefully the week after we will be back and get to February 1991. What it does, 1990, sorry, what it does do is it allows me more time to play Retrograde because I've been playing so much of that bloody game. I'm really addicted to it. I've got to get through it as well. I'm going to complete it. Crazy. But yeah, I really like the game. But yeah, so we hope you've enjoyed that. We'll see you again next week. As ever, I have been Adrian Mills.
I have been Graham Raddings.
And like I said, we'll see you again next week. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Zap to the Past podcast. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into the world of Commodore 64 games, as well as the music, films and TV from around the 1980s, driven, of course, by the issue of Zap 64 magazine published at that time. We will return with a whole new batch of games and stuff to talk about next week. Until then, if you want to listen to or download previous episodes of Zap to the Past, and why wouldn't you, they can all be found on our website at zaptothepast.com, as well as being available on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer, Audible, Player FM, and, well, pretty much anywhere where we can upload them. By the way, we do always love to hear from our amazing listeners, so if you'd like to contact us about anything in the podcast or beyond, you can do so by emailing us at zaptothepast@gmail.com. We're also active on Twitter under @ZapToThe, as well as Facebook, Instagram, and most social media platforms. Just search for Zap to the Past and you'll find us. Oh, and if you like the podcast and what we're doing, please do like, share, review, rate us. It really helps. Something, apparently. The Zap to the Past podcast is written and produced by Adrian Mills and Graham Raddings and recorded at FlakyBits 2.0 Studio. All opinions expressed are those of the writers, and while we indeed love Zap 64 magazine, the Zap to the Past podcast is not affiliated with it in any way. Stay safe, see you next time, and remember, we play these games so you don't have to.